interrupting the current neo-Uranial climate challenge, the ever-controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 645. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. At once, we have evidence that this place is not a spectator sport, especially when you are not a spectator. And the news of the assassination of Charlie Kirk has filled my feed, but so non-politically minded am I didn't know anything much about him or follow him at all. Didn't. I heard a name here and there, but a couple of times that I've heard him, he sounded to me to be a well-intentioned adept talker in what he thought he knew, but didn't have the more mature, comprehensive awareness needed to speak beyond the aspirations of people, the inspirational motivator that people described him as. He's very similar to the technique that Trump uses. And apparently because of that, he was well regarded. But Charlie Kirk did accomplish successful political candidate training and support, moving people into the government and to foster and encourage that participation. But as I've suggested routinely in prior episodes behind the woodshed, it doesn't end there. Getting people into office is only the beginning of that option. And it requires working with those in office to restore the America that people thought existed. For example, as I've mentioned, working with the county commissioner to reinstitute that 10th Amendment state or local power to stop the federal government and its let it burn policy in her work that President Trump recognized during Trump 1. This is the kind of work that needs to be done beyond, and it takes more than just political stumping, more than aspiration and inspiration. It's a lot of perspiration at that point. But may Charlie Kirk rest in peace. My sincerest condolences to his wife and their little daughter and son, who will likely forever wonder why someone would take their father from them. Now, I'm hoping maybe 1,000 take Charlie Kirk's place, but far better, as you would have done any time you are getting behind the woodshed. Remember, that's a special little thing we're doing. It's you doing the work. It's you figuring out how to protect yourself and not to be in the way, first of all, and if you get in the way, what to do about it. That as we move into this time of increasing societal breakdown, the act of the assassination is really more of my interest, and where even more gore is going to be required, because, as they say, if it bleeds, it leads. Society breaks down completely as one planned outcome, or to distract people from what they ought to be doing beyond being inspired by their vicarious voice, which admits that they themselves feel they don't have a voice, nor can take any action with them, to which I've answered well over a decade now. And let this be your turning point, right, Charlie Kirk? Your turning point is to get you by a woodshed. Stop living vicariously through Kirk as your voice. Take your motivating inspiration and do something tangible with it in your own right. Persist and prevail. The question, was Charlie Kirk's killer a pro? A veteran of Russia's elite Alpha counterterrorism unit breaks it down, professional killer or manipulated pawn. And part of this, I'm not interested in more of the speculation. It'll come out the way it comes out, whether that's even the truth. And that's what we need to be looking at very carefully, how this thing plays out, because we're looking for clues on how we're going to protect ourselves in the future if it keeps coming down, how not to be jumping from the fire pan into the fire where they want us to go. We have to have a basis, a solid foundation with which we think and move and do things relative to the chaos that we're watching and developing more profoundly. The assassin wasn't necessarily a pro. It may have been an ordinary American with firearms experience, groomed and manipulated into becoming a willing killer, either by partisan media or even security services, says FSB Lieutenant Colonel retired Andrei Popov. U.S. security agencies are known to run an entire cohort of informal agents, identified ahead of time, led on, controlled, and given the chance to carry out their crime, after which they are liquidated or allowed to disappear, ensuring plausible deniability for powerful faces behind the scenes. Free access to military-grade firearms eases the process consideration, Popov says. With the purchase of automatic rifles and machine guns not a problem in many states, and the U.S. home to a huge, huge market of guns, black, gray, and white. Echoes of attempt on Trump's life. For the poorly guarded venue and absence of basic security tools, the snipers positioning at a high vantage point and firing at a well-lit target on a platform, Kirk's murder had, quote, the same handwriting as the 2024 failed Trump assassination, Popov said. Does a secret criminal cabal control U.S. politics? The FSB vet suspects, quote, some kind of criminal organization has been in control of the law enforcement and domestic intelligence in the U.S. going back to the Kennedy era, organizing them in such a way as to ease political murder and protect the masterminds. I wonder which criminal organization that FSB vet is talking about. Any ideas, James? Jesus, Angleton? Any ideas at all? The ability to freely kill politicians means control, exercised in the most radical way imaginable. By eliminating people influencing public opinion in a direction that's not favorable to this organization or group, Popov summed up. So it's also been reported here right after Zionist Ben Shapiro immediately steps up to say he's going to take over where Charlie Kirk left off at the universities the day after Kirk went public questioning the veracity of these stories in Gaza. And I'm not so sure they could plan all this in one day. The point was, we'll watch and we'll see Charlie Kirk doing a change. A subtle change was moving within him, and it was not unknown. So this is not seemingly not much different than a cultural replacement. Who could this criminal organization be? And why isn't Trump sinking that boat? And why did you post to social media so quickly within minutes before the mainstream news of the Kirk assassination, BB, or should I say 30-odd six, Milikowski, Saint Yehu? Who has been the chosen patsy? Asking for a friend, of course. So many questions, so little time. Speaking of a 30-odd six, I've shot a bolt action. I hit a thumbtack holding up the target at a little more than 100 yards, open-sighted. But that 30-06 bolt action was a bit of a beast with a kick. Not comfortable at all, like the 308 I was shooting as well at the time. And I'm not sure I'd even try to a shot with the rifle and scope I saw mounted where it was that the government is suggesting is the assassination weapon, as well as something else. But it's hard to tell for sure, just from appearance and bad video. It looked like the bullet hit Charlie Kirk in the lower chest, about where his heart is, where there was said to be an anti-ballistic plate. And one final video I got to see, it was a breakdown of it, that someone just put up. It was really a GIF. It was kind of interesting. It was better quality. When he got hit there, down below, it lifted him up again, pushing him slightly back. And you can see, it, frame by frame, the lifting of his shirt, as it, you can see, it's happened so quick, though, but the bullet is seemingly moving up, and it either ricochets or pulls and hits him in the neck. So with the center of mass hit at or near the heart, which the plate stopped, was the shooter so very lucky to get the ricochet or pull, or was that a planned shrapnel shot? There may also be a question as to whether the shooter had the gun on the roof, but I think I've seen a couple of frames of one video that was shows the barrel of that gun with a cloth wrapped over the top. It finally comes loose in a couple of frames. So he's just putting it down to get off the roof at that point. Just a very short, brief look. So that's kind of, I'm going to be settled where I think he was covering it on the roof. It was very hard to find, though. It wasn't so easy to see that. But anyway, that's kind of neither here nor there, given the latest that I'll get to here in a moment. And it will be for those better than me to qualify the official narrative. Again, so many questions, so little time on this. But that it also was reported right after Trump says that Kirk's suspected killer detained, hopes he gets the death penalty. And this is really not the point I wanted to get to, but the way he goes to what Trump says here and what he's saying and doing, it's indicative of a future. And that's why I found this part important. Otherwise, I would just tell you that, and I'll do that in the next tab. They do confirm that that's what happened. They detained somebody. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Friday that the suspect in the murder of conservative activist Charlie Kirk has been detained by law enforcement. Quote, they have the person that they wanted, so you have breaking news, Trump said. I hope he's going to be found guilty, I would imagine, and I hope he gets the death penalty, Trump said. Trump noted that he's unsure whether Charlie Kirk's killer acted alone or was part of a larger group. Trump said that someone close to Charlie Kirk's alleged killer tipped off law enforcement. Somebody close to him turned him. It happened with others. Somebody this close recognizes even a little tilt of the head, which nobody else would do, and somebody that was very close to him said, that's him, Trump said. But here's the money quote in this report, why I even stuck with it. In the bottom of this little story, putting Trump in the news, but this is kind of what concerned me when I first heard it from the Don't Let a Crisis Go to Waste Department. Trump also called for quick trials in the United States. One thing I say, we have to have quick trials. I call it quick trial because in China, they do have quick trials. You know, they don't wait 6 years in China, Trump said, discussing the possible death penalty for the killer of the U.S. conservative activist Charlie Kirk. He hasn't complained enough about judicial corruption against him all these years that he now wants that corruption to proceed faster? Or when did Trump start trusting and giving favored nation status to the Chinese courts? The two-hour corrupted, self-interested lawfare system, which already enjoys a 92-98% conviction rate, Trump wants to deny due process, inject military administrative officers, and advocates that Chinese court summary trial execution will make America great again. And people voted for this? Really? Yeah, never let a crisis go to waste, right? Zio leftist Rahm Emanuel. Trump called his murder a dark moment for the nation and vowed to find those responsible. This may be more than a dark moment. It may also be a signal for the nation that we must take heed of. This is a very serious matter. Public assassinations are nothing to walk away from, actually. Kirk died in a hospital after being shot in the neck at an event at Utah Valley University on Wednesday. And I think about Charlie Kirk's young family and the separation, and it's really a sad thing. God rest Charlie Kirk's soul. My condolences to his family. And there was confirmation right after that, Trump exclusive. Kirk murderer suspect was apprehended. The suspect was identified by Utah Governor Spencer Cox as Tyler Robinson, a young native of the state and a student at the university where Kirk was shot. A family friend turned the suspected assassin into Washington County Sheriff's Office on Thursday evening after a family member told them Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident, Cox said at the press conference. According to AP, Robinson's father had recognized his son in the images released by the FBI and convinced him to turn himself in with the help of a youth pastor. But it's reported that the father was able to convince him to at least talk to their youth minister, who also serves on a U.S. Marshals Service Fugitive Task Force. Ponder that one. He refused at first to turn himself in, but then changed his mind, the outlet cited and source in the investigation was saying. That's curious to me as well. Convinced to turn himself in with the help of a pastor, the faith of which he didn't use to avoid murdering, speaks possibly to a greater fragmentation taking place in our society, certainly than I was thinking of. I mean, it's pretty chaotic, pretty separated, but this is now moving things into a much more, what can I say, I guess unintelligible condition. And this is where the power to discern is going to come in so heavy. You're going to have a very solid foundation as we walk into this coming future. I think this was the signal that we better really have it together. And it kind of got me to thinking what I've been trying to do all this time with the Covey swindle. Start to learn where your foundations are. This is where you can find it here. You better start learning what's going on. And don't go with the flow, if you will. This is not going to be that a time you can do that. You're going to have your own mind, and it's going to be a clear thought, and we're going to have to work ourselves together despite our differences. That's been one of my messages this whole time as well. That's what they want to do to us. I suppose this fragmentation follows what we were witnessing while the Newstis feeds covered the assassination of one man, they completely ignored the assassination of hundreds of Palestinians. A genocide the hyphenated Christians woke right agree with. And then again, maybe not so far removed, where the politics, the enthusiasm for the state of Israel collides with a reported Mormon upbringing in the heart of Zion against someone questioning the Israeli leaders and more recently the state propaganda. What say you, Benjamin B. Nimble Satan Yehu? And all this does not bode well for America if we, the people, don't refrain from the violence that they need out of us, as they program you to believe your needs as an American are fundamentally different than your neighbor or anyone else, instead of realizing those needs are universal, as is the need to not fight each other, not be divided amongst each other, but to help each other, whatever your perceived differences are, which are likely programmed into you as well, exploiting that weakness that societal handlers know all about you, that you don't know about yourselves, knowing you better than you do yourself. But how many ages have I been speaking behind a woodshed about this very frailty in everyone all this time? We the people are in a very precarious place if we don't get it together and get together to alter the course to our choosing, avoiding the future that they want for us. And so many questions. Questions like, if you are the peace president, why rename the Pentagon the Department of War when government force is not peace? Renaming Pentagon signals West's peace through strength agenda shift. Donald Trump has signed an executive order rebranding the U.S. Defense Department into the Department of War, with the Pentagon changing its official web address to war.gov. The U.S. president said he would ask Congress to codify the change. The U.S. decision to rename the Pentagon as the Department of War isn't just a gimmick. It's a window into the global shifts, explains Alexander Yakovenko, deputy director of Rossiya Sogodia, Sputnik's parent company. The new title is more honest and understandable for everyone, says Yakovenko, who heads the Committee of Global Issues and International Security of the Russian Security Council Scientific Experts Board. A similar example exists in Russia. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs recently renamed its Department of Pan-European Cooperation to the Department of European Issues, a move that is both symbolic and substantively accurate. The takeaway is that clear terminology reflects current geopolitical realities. Shifts toward peace through strength. The U.S. renaming mirrors a broader Western trend. The pursuit of peace through force and a willingness to dismantle the post-war international order built on the UN Charter. Key principles of that order include prohibition of force in resolving international disputes, balanced by the right to self-defense under Article 551, protection of human and minority rights, the requirement for unanimity among permanent UN Security Council members, veto power, encouraging negotiation between major powers. Western erosion of trust in the Ukraine crisis, the West bypassed the UN Security Council and acted via the General Assembly, where Russia has no veto. Trust was further eroded when France's then-President François Hollande and Germany's then-Chancellor Angela Merkel admitted that they never intended to implement the 2015 Minsk agreements, which had been endorsed by the Security Council with U.S. involvement. Another key element of Western policy is supporting the creation of ethnocentric, essentially racist, state in Ukraine, the echoes of interwar period when aggressive nationalism fueled global conflict culminating in World War II. In effect, the West is dropping its mask. The implications are profound, not just for post-war European settlements like the Yalta-Potsdam system, initially conceived during the drafting of the UN Charter, but also for the Versailles Peace Treaty after World War I, notably without Russia, or it might have been fair and lasting. This is certainly something to think about. And this doesn't sound too strong or peaceful through strength to me. How about you? Why did Qatar's air defenses fail during Israel's attack? So go back to the last tab. What I was reading there It's the general failure of the West to uphold its agreements and duties and obligations under international provisions that nations have agreed to. Again, that's not instilling a lot of confidence. Neither is we now see evidence of the breaking of agreements to nations. The missiles fired by Israel could have been intercepted by Qatar's U.S. Patriot system. Russia military expert Yuri Nutov weighs in on the Patriots were simply turned off by the U.S. The main feature of these systems is their close integration with airborne early warning and control aircraft, AWACS, satellites, and command centers that provide targeting data, Knutov tells Sputnik. In addition, they have a remote shutdown feature to prevent accidental friendly fire. This shutdown feature is problematic. Turkey refused to purchase the Patriot specifically because the American side could disable these systems at any moment, and therefore preferred the S-400, according to the pundit. The U.S. didn't defend Qatar. So, yes, another international black eye for untrustworthy Uncle Sam. Apart from using Patriots, Qatar hosts the U.S. largest military base in the Middle East. But according to the agreement between Qatar and U.S., the Americans were, of course, supposed to defend Qatar's airspace by opening fire on Israeli aircraft. However, this did not happen. The U.S. military knew about the incoming Israeli aircraft, yet took no action, effectively allowing them to operate freely against Hamas delegation invited to Qatar for negotiations. Sounds like a model action here, doesn't it? Where have we heard about that before? When we say the United States military, we're talking Trump here. He's the chief, commander-in-chief of the armed forces, right? The U.S. was fully aware of this. Arab countries, and not just them, should take note. Wherever U.S. patriots are used, the U.S. can disable them at any moment, leaving their skies completely defenseless. It does not make Trump a peacemaker, but confirms he is a peace faker of the highest order. The U.S. always sides with Israel. Yeah, Trump does Israel first, or even before America first. Quote, this is undoubtedly a scandalous situation given that Qatar is a close U.S. ally and had promised to invest billions in the American economy. I'd say scandalous. It's reported that the Trump administration, encouraged Hamas to the meeting to discuss a proper ceasefire, then had Israel attack the place, disabling all the air defenses for Israel. It's also reported that Israeli jets were refueled by U.S. tankers whose base is in Qatar, the very base they say is the largest. But take note, planning or enabling an attack on civilian functions, not military here. As you'll remember, I've read the international law regarding belligerent occupations that purports to prohibit attacking people in a civilian capacity is a war crime. And I say now purports, because there is apparently no accountability, or insufficiently so. So is it a law if there is no enforcement? Scandalously, the Americans warned Qatar of the attack only 10 minutes after it had taken place. Appeasing the U.S. is futile. They always side with Israel. So how does any of this promote peace as well? Qatar is shown to be a placemat on the table of the Greater Zionista Federation Movement Expansion Project. To Qatar's shame. And we see all those nations there just taking a knee, taking a missile, losing people, allowing the death of people. Israel's Doha strike burns bridges for peace, marks dangerous strategic overstretch. Now, we point again to Israel, but Trump is right here allowing it, but for his direction and agreement. No different than in Ukraine. Israel expanding the geography of countries it has bombed on Tuesday, targeting a delegation of Hamas officials involved in a peace negotiations in Qatar. Sputnik asked a pair of regional experts how the aggression will impact Israel's position in the region in the long term. Israeli military operations in Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, and now the Gulf signal an overstretch that won't be left without serious diplomatic repercussions, Ankara-based security analyst Dr. Hassan Salim Ozertim told Sputnik. Looking at Europe, looking at the U.S., looking at the Gulf, these countries have started to articulate their concerns about Israeli aggressions, which was not the case before because the leverage of the Israeli lobby, especially in U.S. politics, Ozertim explained. With Qatar serving as a mediator in the Gaza war, the Doha attack also undermines Israel's credibility among the Gulf powers Tel Aviv wants to forge ties with through the Abraham Accords. Israel's aggression may even result in the creation of a new regional pact, Ozertim said. The Saudi crown prince in said Riyadh will be supporting Qatar. In the past, we know that Qatar and Saudi Arabia had political problems. They've managed to solve them. Now we're talking about a military alliance. An anti-Israel opinion or bloc in the region among local actors, increasing the probability of potential confrontation between Israel and others. By attacking Doha as peace negotiators for ending the Gaza genocide were in progress, Netanyahu once again demonstrated his disdain for negotiations and his preference for brute force as a ultimate solution, says Mehran Kamrava, a professor of government at Georgetown University in Qatar. Netanyahu's strategy of managed chaos threatens to spiral out of control and further isolate Israel, making it a rogue pariah state, Kamrava said. Let them eat chaos. Sound familiar, don't it? Same plan. Trump and Netanyahu washing each other's back, each suggesting each other deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. But someone's going to have to explain to me how killing, carnage, and creating chaos makes peace, and then worthy of a peace prize, because I don't get it. Besides Israel's reputation, whatever good that could possibly be anymore, besides Israel's reputation, the attack promises to cost the U.S. much of its already diminished credibility in the Arab world, the scholar says, emphasizing that unconditional U.S. support for Israel is proving extremely costly as the Israeli government takes actions to make it seem increasingly unhinged and devoid of all rationality. Let me interject on that. The government takes actions that make it seem increasingly unhinged and devoid of all rationality is the playbook for Charlie Kirk, is the playbook for left to right, is the playbook for what we see the other from anyone's perspective. So I want to point that out there. This is they make it look like they're unhinged. Somebody does, even if it's a third party, to make you think they are. And then you respond. But let's observe rationality is irrelevant to a psychopath, or two, or the AIPAC compromised U.S. Congress. It is reported Trump said, quote, I was very unhappy about it, very unhappy about every aspect, and we got to get the hostages back. But I was very unhappy about the way that went down, he told reporters on Tuesday. But what else he gonna say? He didn't do anything to reprimand Netanyahu either after that. And what's Trump gonna do when he sits in Netanyahu's jump seat? He's not in control, apparently, at all. And maybe when Trump said follow the plan you thought was to make America great again, as with Qatar peace negotiations or those with Iran, America first, Israel firster, he knew his attack on America was nigh. Trump issues rare rebuke of Israel. He's going to save some face. But what else is he going to say after leading Hamas on as he did Iran? President Trump publicly rebuked Israel Tuesday, after its military strike at Qatar, warning that the attack on a key U.S. ally risks unraveling fragile peace negotiations in the region. Unilaterally bombing inside Qatar, a sovereign nation and close ally of the United States that is working very hard and bravely, taking risks with us to broker peace, does not advance Israel or America's goals, he wrote on Truth Social. I view Qatar as a strong ally and a friend of the U.S., and feel very badly about the location of the attack. Apparently, not as strong as he feels for Israel, or not strong enough to keep the Patriot air defenses operating. Other nations have condemned the strike in even stronger terms, suggesting its violation of international law of Qatar's sovereignty. Israel says it was targeting Hamas leadership. But targeting civilian Hamas leadership is a war crime, remember? And Trump did nothing more. That's all he feels bad about it. And all the other nations, all they can do is just talk, talk, talk. The Israeli strike has complicated ongoing peace negotiations, with Trump acknowledging that efforts to secure the release of the hostages are now in jeopardy. Well, if you look at the real situation, the truth that Trump's not wanting to tell y'all, those hostages are dead. Satan Yehu's using them for his political needs. There is really no peace negotiations. That's the ongoing lie, which is exactly what Satan Yehu wants, endless war, to save his neck, not peace. Qatar's Prime Minister, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani, condemned the attack as an act of treachery and disputed Trump's claim that the U.S. Special Envoy was instructed to warn Qatar of the impending attack as soon as Trump knew about it. According to Al Thani, Qatari officials only learned of the strike after it had occurred. Trump reportedly spoke to Al Thani as well as Qatar's emir and assured both that no such incidents would happen again. So did Trump just admit he makes the decision? And if not, how can he guarantee there will be no such incidents again? Sounds like Trump's hostage canard is not just in jeopardy, but actions that now Qatar is now starting to work with against, I think it's actually helplessness, but this is all they get to do, and they're apparently going to start to do this. Qatar PM Israel just killed any hope for those hostages. And then they did a little bit more. Strikes of Hamas negotiators in Doha sparks global condemnation and fear. Let me go back to the fear. Fear, intimidation, and dread. Is that peaceful? Is that peace? And all Trump can do is say he doesn't like what he saw. Very unhappy. Unhappy, no joy, I guess. Qatar's prime minister is sharply criticizing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after an airstrike on Doha killed 6 Hamas members assigned to ceasefire talks. Again, those are civilian people. Those are not military people. It's a war crime. It's an international norm to not kill civilians, especially ones trying to work out peace, which is supposed to be the object, that we live in peace, despite ourselves. Again, the message to us in America, as we see a potential signal telling us we better make that real in this country really soon. In a CNN interview, Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman bin Jassim Al Thani called the strike an act of state terror and claimed it killed any hope for the remaining hostages in Gaza. The attack carried out on Tuesday targeted Hamas representatives in negotiations facilitated by Qatar, the U.S., and other Gulf states. And I need to interject, it may be that Qatar is a player in this as well, not too independent either. So take that into consideration as we read all these stories. It's also being reported that what Trump declared to be the largest economic deal in American history with Qatar may be toast. The greatest ally to America, Satan Yehu's shtick, might have just cost Trump $1.5 trillion deal back to America as Qatar decides to terminate that deal. So what kind of ally is Israel then? And some of you voted for this deceit? Really? What you voted for, huh? And Israel's not done yet. We're going to do some more. Yemen's Houthis confirmed prime minister killed in Israeli strike on Sana'a. Again, the civilian population is supposed to be off limits, and it's supposed to be left alone. And this prime minister was killed. That's a war crime. And Trump is okay with it. A Houthi official has vowed vengeance against Israel after the Yemeni group confirmed that an Israeli airstrike earlier this week killed the prime minister of the Houthis government in the capital Sana'a. Ahmad al-Rahawi was killed in a Thursday strike in Sana'a, along with several other ministers, the Houthis said in a statement on Saturday. The Houthis did not specify how many other ministers were also killed in the Israeli attack. And remember, they have an agreement with Trump that they wouldn't send missiles back over to Israel. The same type of deal that Iran made, not to send more missiles to Israel. And I'm just wondering, these Arab people, what's wrong with them? They were able to bring Israel to its knees, and Israel wants to act like this. Why aren't they defending themselves? But that's not for me to say for sure. That's not my decision. But again, remember how this works out. The murdering of a civilian minister is a war crime that the peace president Trump aids and abets Satan Yehu to commit. And I wonder when all these countries will start lobbing their missiles endlessly at Israel. And if not, why not? Because it also looks like Trump's Abraham Accords ought to be toast, not with champagne, with burnt carbon. And dropping the mask of peace indeed, the crude, brutish, disrespectful, lawless, arrogant strength it is, I don't give an S, asterisk, asterisk, T, Vance defends cartel boat strike. So peaceful, folks. The U.S. Vice President has dismissed accusations of war crimes, like a bank robber dismisses he's a bank robber, or any criminal like that. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance has bluntly rejected accusations that a missile strike on a boat carrying alleged Venezuela-linked cartel members amounted to a war crime. On Tuesday, the U.S. destroyed what President Donald Trump described as a drug-carrying boat in international waters in the southern Caribbean, killing 11 people on board. Trump claimed the vessel was tied to the Tren de Aragua cartel, which he has designated as a terrorist organization. Venezuela officials dismissed the footage as fabricated, calling it cartoonish. In a post on X on Saturday, Vance praised the strike, saying that killing cartel members who poison our fellow citizens is the highest and best use of our military. Social media influencer and frequent Trump critic Brian Krasenstein challenged the attack's legality, arguing that killing the citizens of another nation who are civilians without any due process is called a war crime. I don't give an S, asterisk, asterisk, T, what you call it, Vance replied. Yeah, or about the American people. As abroad, so at home. As I've been schooling you behind the woodshed. How are the future homegrown feeling about that right about now? And what about the victims of the Epstein file hoax? And Mossad had nothing to do with Epstein, the JFK assassination, or undermining the United States of America, or aiding the Gaza genocide to a greater Israel, correct? There's gold in Fort Knox, right? While many Trump supporters backed the Vice President, Senator Rand Paul condemned his remarks as despicable and thoughtless. And Rand Paul is another sort of deceiver, if I remember correctly. His background is like a flip-flopping politician, looking for a vote or support, and not above supporting U.S. interference in foreign countries through various organizations or tactics, though he'll likely deny or flip-flop on those too. He is the one, remember, that handed Fauci the dual-use bioweapon get-out-of-jail-free card through the Senate testimonials without objection. The strike followed the deployment of U.S. Naval Armada in the Western Caribbean last month as part of Trump's crackdown on drug trafficking. In 2020, a U.S. court indicted Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on charges of leading the cartel de los Soles, an allegation he denounced as a plot to topple him. It was reported on Friday that Trump is considering strikes against cartels inside Venezuela. The president has denied regime change plans, but described the country's 2024 election as very strange, fairly well undercutting the position of others in his administration pushing for overthrow that Maduro is illegitimate, which isn't any of Washington's business anyway, also undermining U.S. action in the Ukraine of any legitimate criticism of Russian integration with the Ukraine and that territory. Now, these people in Washington are just not that intelligent, it seems. They're just brutes. I don't give an S, asterisk, asterisk, T, criminal thugs is all, against everyone. No respect, no honor, no integrity. He has some splaining to do, at the very least. Potty mouth, last one to shake the Pope's hand, Vance, should be ashamed of himself. In disparaging, denying due process, he shows he's not fit to serve under the oath he undertook and should resign. Right, Donald, due process destroying Trump? And Venezuela comes right out and disputes the U.S. claim of boat strikes that killed 11. Also Trump. Caracas rejects U.S. drug claims as military tensions escalate. Venezuela says none of the 11 people killed in last week's U.S. military boat strike in the Caribbean were members of the notorious Tren de Aragua gang, despite U.S. assertions to the contrary. Internal Minister Diosdado Cabello announced on state TV that local investigators found no link to the Venezuelan gang or the drug trafficking among the deceased. Cabello criticized U.S. authorities for using lethal force rather than arrests, calling the incident a murder committed against a group of citizens. He asked how U.S. forces identified the people aboard the boat as a gang member, sarcastically wondering if they had a chip or a QR code scanned by the U.S. military. As I said last episode about no due process done, those people in that boat were denied due process and never had a chance to object due to their innocence or to the extent Trump was wrong, and now they're dead and they can't. The military violated every principle it's honored up until now to not take life unless it's attacked. And I've heard officers come back to tell us that that's the protocol. I have a friend of mine that used to be in the Coast Guard. That's what he said years ago. This is absolutely disgraceful, what's going on, what this administration's doing. Again, and it doesn't have to. Also Trump. Trump comments on knife murder of Ukrainian woman. Another tragedy. But it's where we are in this country now. President Trump has condemned the fatal stabbing of a 23-year-old Ukrainian woman, Irina Zaratskaya, on a train in Charlotte, North Carolina, describing the incident as a horrific act committed by a mentally deranged lunatic, according to a statement posted Monday on Truth Social. Trump also criticized the media's response to the killing, asking, "Where is the outrage from the mainstream media on this horrible tragedy?" During his remarks at the Museum of the Bible, Trump said, "We're all people of religion, but there are evil people. We have to confront that. If we don't handle that, we don't have a country." Start taking notes of all the rules and the things that are going on, the consequences, not to diminish the innocent woman's murder. Where is the outrage from "Give them hell, forget the partial deals, go in with full force and finish it, Trump," for the hundreds of thousands of innocent Palestinians massacred by an evil political movement masquerading as a religious group condemned in the Bible of the museum? The same Bible that states, "But he is a Jew whose praise is not of men, but of God. Therefore, anyone calling themselves Jew is an imposter, as is any supporting the cause of an imposter, likely a member of the synagogue of Satan," right, Benjamin Milikowski, Satan Yehu? "Because he is not a Jew which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. He is a Jew which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart in the spirit and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God," as you'll read at Romans 20:28-29, being that we're all in a religion. We also know that thou shalt not murder, right, Vice President Potty Mouth Vance? And the exalted and balanced independence of the mind has nothing to do with the praise either, right, Xi Jinping? Be safe out there, my listener, please. Also Trump, peacenik that he be. White House removes anti-war vigil after 4 decades. Thank you. Peace, President Trump. Real America's Voice reporter told Trump it was an eyesore. Law enforcement officials on Sunday removed a peace vigil that had stood outside the White House for more than 4 decades. President, almost as long as the injustice of the Roe versus Wade decision. And some others, remember. President Trump ordered it to be taken down as part of a clearing of homeless encampments in the nation's capital. Filipos Milicao Bello, a volunteer who has manned the vigil for years, said park police removed it early Sunday morning, telling him the memorial was a shelter. Quote, the difference between an encampment and a vigil is that an encampment is where homeless people live, Milicao Bello said. Quote, as you can see, I don't have a bed. I have signs, and it's covered by the First Amendment to freedom of speech and freedom of expression. The White House told the AP in a statement that the vigil was a hazard to those visiting the White House and the surrounding areas. So it's been a hazard for 40 years, even during Trump 1.0. Taking down the vigil is the latest in a series of actions the Trump administration has ordered as part of the federal takeover of policing in the city, which began last month. The White House has defended the intervention as needing to fill Trump's executive order on the beautification of D.C. Does his executive orders extend outside of his cabinet? I think is a question. It certainly shouldn't be and can't be one that trespasses upon the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. And yet he did. For beautification, I guess, make beautiful America again, right? We'll just take all your rights away. That's going to make it beautiful. Milicao Bello called the move a civil rights violation. I don't have to say civil liberty. You know, civil rights is the extortions of every kind that you can read at 42 U.S.C. 1981, but civil liberties violation. They're choosing to call a place that is not an encampment just to fit what is in Trump's agenda of removing the encampments, he said. The vigil was started in 1981 by activist William Thomas to promote nuclear disarmament and an end to global conflicts. It is believed to be the longest continuous anti-war protest in U.S. history. When Thomas died in 2009, other protesters like Milicao Bello staffed the tiny tent and the banner, which reads, Live by the bomb, die by the bomb, around the clock to avoid it being dismantled by authorities. The small but persistent act of protest was brought to Trump's attention during the event at the White House Friday. Brian Glenn, a correspondent for the conservative network Real America's Voice, told the president the blue tent was an eyesore for those who come to the White House and described it as a anti-American and sometimes anti-Trump. So the First Amendment is an eyesore. What? Like pink eye? Why didn't Trump use a little bit of his billions to give the guy a nice looking tent? If he's so America first. But in the world of nations, lawless bullying is becoming less and less tolerant. If we're going to tolerate it at home, it's not being tolerated out there, and enough is enough. The dollar gets a black eye. Maybe from shooting that 30-06 with that misplaced long scope on it. No, not Gary Long, the length. That could easily, Vince, easily get confused. But anyway, to black eyes. Dollar will inevitably decline. Economies should unite to prevent new U.S. hegemony. Hegemony? Still haven't got the accent right on there, do I? Got the pronunciation right, not the accent. I'm syllabically challenged, apparently. He says decline here. Listen very carefully, folks. The dollar doesn't disappear. But global parity needs to be accomplished in the global financial system. The U.S. dollar will inevitably decline, and emerging economies should unite to prevent the establishment of a new U.S. hegemony. Now in the digital assets market, Wang Wen, dean of Kojiang Institute for Financial Studies at China's Renmin University, told Sputnik on the sidelines of the Eastern Economic Forum, quote, the dollar is inevitable to decline, and the U.S. strategy is to use stable coins instead of the dollar. And there's the shift to the beginnings of the Siberian Gulag in doing so. So maybe the U.S. will establish a new stable coin hegemony. Now, the time cannot wait for us. The time is very limited. So I think the emerging economies should unite together much closer than before against the new hegemony, establishment of instable coins and the digital financial system in the future, Wang said on the sidelines of EFF's tokenization of the financial market, taking a look into the future session. He added that Russia and China face similar and common challenges posed by the risk of the U.S. dominating the emerging global digital financial market. See, the global system is not going away, folks. It's just not going anywhere. It's there, just being fortified, and it's becoming more integrated into even your life, down to the last nickel that you want to spend. You become the property. In late July, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a law on the phased integration of the digital ruble into the budgetary framework. The bill supplemented the budget code by introducing the concept of digital ruble account of the Federal Treasury. Stop me when you sound different than what the United States was considering over time here. Except they went to stablecoins, didn't they? Because they thought they had a problem with the Treasury, didn't they? Now you got your third-party liability built right into the United States. The U.S. account on the digital rubles platform operated by the Russian Central Bank will be available to the Treasury free of charge. Not you, the Treasury. In March, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order establishing a strategic cryptocurrency reserve, which will include such cryptocurrencies as Cardano, Solana, and Ripple. In July, the U.S. House of Representatives passed three bills that sought to regulate the digital assets market in the United States in line with Trump's campaign promises. Did those boomers really appreciate what they were being told by Trump? Did Trump even understand? It sounded to me like his son Barron Late told him what the power was, and then you watch the family jump into it all. The bill was approved by the Senate last month and sent to Trump for a signature. See, it's already working, folks, as I've been telling you. Already working. They didn't know anything about this a couple of years ago. Now it's already law. Cooperation on digital currency can help Russia and China deepen their financial ties and continue the de-dollarization process, Wang Wen said. The cooperation between Russia and China in financial fields will accelerate. We will have more deepening cooperation in financial issues. Not only will we continue the de-dollarization process in bilateral trade, but also will construct and establish new payment channels and a cross-border financial security network, Wang said on the sidelines of the EFF tokenization of the financial market. Moscow and Beijing are entering a new third wave of cooperation, which includes boosting their financial ties, he said, taking a look into the future. As U.S. weaponizes crypto and stablecoin and risks blowback. Just like you watch them do with the dollar weaponizing and watch what happened to the world. But look at the underlying potential that's being created out of it to actually be a future where it all coagulates like a blood clot against we the people. The U.S. aims to wield a digital asset to fix its debt and cement dollar dominance at others' costs. But we also identified they're saying enough is enough. Here's why the plan is set to fail. Stablecoins and crypto. Stablecoin issuers got buy U.S. debt via treasury bonds, pegging their digital currency to the U.S. dollar. With foreign holders selling treasury, stablecoin issuers could become top U.S. debt holders, some in the U.S. Congress claim. U.S.-pegged stablecoins could bypass banks in big emerging markets, undercut local currencies, and boost dollar dominance. Can I remind you that BlackRock is getting into this already, as well as a couple of others. Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are pitched as inflation hedges and tools for faster, cheaper finance. Why the plan won't fly. Financial analyst Paul Gonikorov tells Sputnik that the plan is a non-starter as there are only five ways to cut U.S. debt. Bonds, interest rates, spending cuts, raising taxes, and bailout or default. Quote, by enabling U.S. dollar-linked transactions outside traditional financial systems, stablecoins extend the dollar's reach, but also challenge U.S. regulatory control. As you already heard, they've already tried to place those stablecoins under control. They kind of know this is happening. But that doesn't stop the problem of it's digital. The dollar peg stablecoins aren't just about convenience. They hinge on the dollar's credibility. Since when has volatility been convenient, though, folks? With its weaponization, how is the dollar credible? For them to thrive, the U.S. must honor commitments, ensure stable trade, and avoid leaning on sanctions. Donald sanctimonious Trump. Sanctions or extraterritorial pressure, according to the pundit. Dollar-pegged stablecoins are also a tool to chip away at other nations' monetary sovereignty, the critic says. Does my listener look at this and understand how huge, huge this problem is with this digital monetization of product, of things, of instruments, possibly the plan, if you will, that they, why they started to do this, the global nature of this? I mean, we're talking sovereignty. This is the old style sovereignty. Everyone talks about it, but they lose it when they get into the system. So I'm not sure where these, where some of this goes anyway, as far as the, where the governments are standing proud to say, well, we're protecting ourselves. As I said, when you get into a system that treats a nation as a mere state and having no more sovereignty than what your rules have agreed, you've agreed to, you've given up your sovereignty. And that's what the UN Sustainable Development Goals do. Again, that third-party liability to this fiction that they've created. So it chips away at national sovereignty, but those countries' governments aren't naive. They can ban those stablecoins and block the U.S. financial grab. Bitcoin and other decentralized cryptos could erode U.S. government control, complicate deficit management, and aid tax evasion. It's the very first thing that they were talking about, remember? That and money laundering. It could generate huge profits without producing any real goods, causing further inflation, economists warned. Sounds like a game for the token players and those equity privateers plundering your 401ks. That I've read and reported on here just recently as well, doesn't it? The West doesn't learn, but nations aren't having it. So your retirement is the next potential victim. And we get it over from China. America Dream, just a tool of manipulation. Also, George Carlin, they call it the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. The U.S. is peddling lies to the world about the benefits of its system, a damning report has claimed. The U.S. spreads propaganda such as the myth of the American Dream as part of a global ideological warfare campaign, a Chinese think tank has claimed in a report released on Sunday. The criticism comes amid heightened tensions between the U.S. and China, with both nations frequently exchanging accusations over political systems, global influence, and ideological agendas. The Xinhua Institute said Washington is promoting a flawed system abroad that fails to deliver results at home. The document focused on what it describes as the colonialization of the mind by American soft power. The American Dream, the belief that hard work and talent can guarantee good life regardless of social class of origin, is one of the illusions the U.S. sells, the report says. In this money-centric society, success stories of personal ascent and material abundance are but infinitely exaggerated versions of survivorship bias, meaning attention is given only to the few successes while the many failures are ignored. The American Dream is a sugar-coated cognitive manipulation tool, a glossy packaging for exporting American values, it stated. The think tank argued that ideals of freedom and equality have been eroded by capitalist privilege in the U.S., while the American political system functions as a democracy of money, capital, and the privileged few. And I need to interject so that we don't get lost in this, use of the word capital. We do not have a money in this country. We have a debt instrument. We have debt instruments. We have something that functions as money. And this is where these other countries get it wrong, but it doesn't make them wrong, if you can understand. As long as we're in a debt system, we're messed up bad, really bad. And so we haven't experienced a capital system, actually, for a long, long time. And the closest we can get back to right before the 70s. And then they took that last little bit of what could be capital away. But that's what we have to get back to. Even if we do it ourselves, don't wait for the government. It's not going to happen. They're going to the digital. That's where the control is. That's where the global control is. No, money, capital, and privileged few. Well, there is a privileged few, but they're not working on money. They're not working with real capital. they're working on exploiting a debt system. It's also said free speech has been undermined by partisan rivalry and corporate interests, and now assassination. The report framed U.S. soft power strategy as a way to reinforce global dominance. They claim Washington mixes concepts broadly recognized as desirable, such as democracy, equality, and human rights, with individualism, egoism, materialism, and hedonism, and presents the results as universal values. But remember, again, all these words are just words until you look at what their meaning is and how they're being used. Democracy is a weapon. And if you look at that, it seems to me that China's not quite getting it. American people aren't getting it either, but I'm saying we can fix that. We just got to get a better understanding of what we're being told and be able to, when see people are using those terms, realize they are an enemy that needs to be stopped. And I don't mean shooting them. I mean, you have to just avoid them. Do not embrace them. Use your speech to talk against them. Give you the facts of what's going on. And then you do your deeds counter to what they're saying. So these universal values, are these universal values of the organic establishment or the current usurped criminal operation? Again, this, we don't have money in this country. It's something that operates as money. There's a huge difference and distinction with two letters, A and S. Absolutely. Adding that as an adjective, it's a big deal. And I don't really think people appreciate this stuff. Some people do. I'm not saying nobody. I just don't see many people reflecting this. The report urged nations to recognize the risks of adopting American worldview and instead pursue independence of the mind to ensure stability and development in an emerging multipolar world, which I've questioned already in the prior tabs. The independence of mind doesn't apply when we get to certain things. But independence of mind as well seems fairly myopic, don't it? What about freedom of body to act and freedom of spirit to rise above? And since the Chinese government is intent on behavioral control, as any nation is imposing global governance, to what extent has it limited that independence of mind to Plato's sustainable shadows? The comparing of fallen systems argument, particularly in light of the largely illiterate U.S. population with an IQ lower than the highest August temperature, benefits only another fallen system. This is VTW RLM 645. And fallen system it is. SCOTUS drops restrictions on LA immigration raids. Judges in the lower said there was a mountain of evidence that the Constitution was being violated. The Supreme Court, however, has removed restrictions on immigration raids in the Los Angeles region, overturning a lower court's limit that were set after evidence surfaced of agents allegedly targeting individuals based on race and other characteristics. So it's unlawful discrimination to use race in deciding a job application or entry into college, but not for immigration enforcement? It's not an unreasonable imposition of race upon Americans that look like unwitting victims to a tyrannical administration of a political agenda? No presumption of innocence for Americans, but a presumption of guilt? Where did the Supreme Court find that little tidbit of acceptable tyranny or terror, or to allow the government to impose fear, intimidation, and dread upon the population it is to serve? Or is it, as I continue to show the evidence, the Supreme Court takes off its mask to show its mission in this post-founding father Lincolnized military slave state is not to serve you, but to serve you up? The High Court's majority provided no explanation, which is typical of emergency docket rulings. Don't you think you deserve a reason to no longer enjoy the presumption of innocence, but an extrajudicial presumption of guilt? The decision aligns with Trump administration's argument that the restraints hindered efforts to address illegal immigration and that its enforcement actions did not violate the law. So the presumption of innocence or forced association or lawful warrant is no longer the law. And that is left unexplained by the supreme leaders of the court. The decision allows ICE to resume roving patrols in the area for now. In a concurring opinion, Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote, that while ethnicity alone cannot justify a stop, it may be considered as a relevant factor alongside other factors when agents decide whom to question about immigration status. He described illegal immigration as a significant issue in Los Angeles and argued that context, such as location and employment, can reasonably contribute to an agent's suspicion. The court's three liberal justices dissented forcefully, with Justice Sonia Sotomayor calling the majority stance a threat to constitutional protections. What do you mean, just a threat? We should not have to live in a country where the government can seize anyone who looks Latino, speaks Spanish, and appears to work a low-wage job, Justice Sotomayor wrote. Rather than stand idly by while our constitutional freedoms are lost, I dissent. But her dissent is of no further worth, is it? She is effectively now standing idly by while our constitutional freedoms are lost, isn't she? She acknowledges freedoms are lost. We shouldn't live in a country like that, but we do, don't we? A lawsuit filed for three people detained in the raids was later certified as a class action. Quote, numerous U.S. citizens. Can I read this again? Also Trump. Numerous U.S. citizens and others who are lawfully present in this country have been subjected to significant intrusions on their liberty, the plaintiffs said in a Supreme Court filing. Many have been physically injured. At least two were taken to a holding facility. This is U.S. citizens, folks, and those lawfully present. Innocent people are being abducted and physically injured by Trump's goons. Is okay with the Supreme Court. Can't be something that a red-blooded American can be okay with. In a July ruling that an appeals court left in place, United States Judge Ma'am E. Frimpong said there was a mountain of evidence that the Constitution was being violated. Frimpong's restraining order banned federal agents from using factors including race or ethnicity, accent, or presence at a location like a car wash from being the only case for detention. Just what Kavanaugh found in reversing this judge to allow the brutalization of innocent people, saying, while ethnicity alone cannot justify a stop, it may be considered as a relevant factor alongside other factors, where the lower court found no other cause used than in this ethnicity. Next, using fabricated homegrown ethnicity as a cause to abduct and brutalize you. And this is what the Pomeranians voted for? Means they are not Americans by any stretch of the chain gang. So now we can infer that conservative justice means conserving the federalized military police occupation in this post-founding Father Lincolnized PATRIOT Act state, not protecting the land of the free and the home of the brave. As Trump reinstates Israeli spyware firm contract, grants it sweeping phone hacking powers. Donald Trump administration has quietly reinstated a contract with a previously banned Israeli spyware maker, Paragon Solutions, granting Immigration and Customs Service ICE sweeping access to hack into any mobile phones, including encrypted applications. Say a Espanol. See? The reversal, published last Saturday on an official U.S. government procurement website, has sparked alarm among human rights groups and digital freedom advocates in the United States. Paragon was founded in 2019 in Israeli-occupied territories by Ehud Schneerson, a commander in Israel's notorious cyber spy outfit, Unit 8200, and with the backing from then Prime Minister Ehud Barak, counseled by Epstein, who didn't kill himself. Florida-based private equity firm, here they are again, AE Industrial Partners, acquired Paragon and merged it with Virginia-based intelligence contractor Red Lattice, clearing the way for the deal's reinstatement. Such a deal, folks. It's the art of the deal, folks. You're watching it right here, how they get it done. and Trump's okay with it. I hope you're picking all this up, folks. I know some of you already kind of seeing Trump in a negative view to start with. I'm just not talking about being that way. I'm saying, no, look at what the deeds are that he does that condemn him. That's what Libra Code tells me to do if I didn't know the Bible that said you know them by their fruits and nuts. Okay, it doesn't say nuts, but anyway. Through this acquisition, Paragon is now classified as domestic rather than foreign vendor given its U.S. ownership. Can I remind you about the Bar Association that I did the research at the archive to show how it comes in as a foreign agent and has the law changed? It changed the law to say, and got the representative to sign it, that said it was then changed to a domestic corporation. It's no different than what they do. This is the model you're hearing. You don't even notice that. This is in your government. This is how your government runs already. That's how they know to do it. According to multiple reports, the company has also forged deep ties with former CIA officials and senior U.S. military figures. ICE has emerged as the contracting agency in deploying Paragon's soft spyware. Civil and human rights groups warn this effectively places one of the most powerful stealth cyber weapons ever created, a tool originally developed outside the U.S., in the hands of an agency notorious for violating most fundamental rights. When it is successfully deployed against the target, a Paragon's hacking software called Graphite is capable of infiltrating virtually any smartphone in the world. Can I go back to the previous paragraph that said the Supreme Court just allowed your fundamental rights to be violated too? They're no different than this software hack. Once a device is compromised, operators in this case, ICE, can not only monitor an individual's physical movements, but also read text messages, view stored photographs, and extract content from encrypted applications such as WhatsApp and Signal. The software was even hijacked the phone's microphone, turning into a real-time listening device. The company claims that Graphite is an ethical alternative. Not lawful, not fundamentally rights protected, but it's ethical alternative to spyware like NSO Group Pegasus, which became the subject of an international scandal in 2021 after investigations revealed its use by governments to hack journalists, dissidents, and even heads of state. In response, the U.S. Commerce Department blacklisted NSO in 2021, barring American firms from supplying it with technology. So in 2025, Trump goes ahead and allows it. Not NSO. Paragon. In 2022, the Citizen Lab of the University of Toronto, a Kanukistan tech organization, revealed that Israel's Pegasus spyware had infected computers used by staffers in the UK Prime Minister's office, despite Britain being one of Tel Aviv's closest allies. Again, with a closest ally like that, who needs an enemy, right? Paragon has sought to differentiate itself from NSO Group, claiming it only does business with so-called democracies. Well, that's a big distinction, isn't it? Despite its claim to higher ethical standards, the company has failed to provide transparency. Actually, it's doing lots of transparency, because you're not seeing it, are you? You're not seeing any bit of it. It's as transparent as you can get. It also claims that it has a no-tolerance policy and will cut off government clients who use spyware to target members of civil society, such as journalists. Nonetheless, it has not disclosed its client list, nor has it outlined specific safeguards to prevent abuse of its spyware. Civil society? Soros meet you much? In practice, Paragon's technology has already been implicated in abuse of privacy and free speech. It insists that its products are intended to be used to prevent organized crime and terrorist attacks, but the company's software has been used extensively in the past to target innocent people. Or the homegrown. You're an organized terrorist criminal, aren't you? In the PATRT Act, you're a criminal. You're a terrorist not been caught yet. They're just looking for how. Remember all that, folks. You've never heard this stuff before. Remember that. And if you don't believe me, go do the research so you see the black and white in your eyes about how that's the truth. that Trump's okay with this. And apparently, the Supreme Court's okay with it, too. Earlier this year, Graphite was linked to a spying campaign in Italy that targeted at least 90 journalists, migrant rights activists, and even associates of the Pope Francis, ICE. As the principal investigative arm of DHS, has long been criticized for its aggressive approach to immigration enforcement to the United States under the incumbent administration, which now extends to anybody that any race that they deem to be qualified to be underneath their wing to be arrested and beat up, so says the Supreme Court. You are the immigrant, folks. Did I say that a couple of broadcasts back? Sure I did. The addition of Graphite to ICE's technology arsenal could allow it to monitor immigrant communities more deeply than ever before, as well as track activists, journalists, and political opponents. These concerns are particularly acute given Trump's heightened efforts to suppress pro-Palestinian activism on college campuses, and I can assure you it's not just Trump that wants that done. ICE already maintains contracts with major surveillance firms such as Palantir and Babel Street. Palantir, you know, as I've been reporting and you can read, has just been giving giant government contracts inside the United States government for its software and has been used to target people in Gaza and kill them, and likely elsewhere, that we're not even hearing about. Palantir is a CIA-backed tech giant that aids the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza through AI-driven targeting systems. Babel Street provides Babel X, an AI surveillance platform. Digital rights group also cautioned that Trump's policies, coupled with the renewal of the Paragon contract, signal that the U.S. is rolling back its previous efforts to regulate the spyware industry, and rather than setting global standards for accountability, Washington is normalizing the abuses. Thank you, Peace President Trump. They warn that this poses a profound threat to free speech and privacy. John Scott Railton, a senior researcher at the University of Toronto's Citizen Lab, and one of the world's leading experts on spyware abuse, says in a statement that such tools were designed for dictatorships, not democracies, built on liberty and protections of individual rights. Thank you, Donald Trump. Invasive secret hacking power is corrupting. That's why there's a growing pile of spyware scandals in democracies, including with Paragon's Graphite, he said, referring to the controversy in Italy. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon expressed alarm in an email to reporters confirming he has requested a briefing from ICE. Quote, ICE is already shredding due process and ruining lives in its rush to lock up kids, cooks, and firefighters who pose no threat to anyone, Wyden wrote. I guess he didn't get the memo. The Supreme Court says all y'all, U.S. citizens, can be locked up until they can figure it out. And I warned you about this 100-mile port thing. And I've been warning you about it. Well, here it is, now in play. I'm extremely concerned about how ICE will use Paragon's spyware to further trample on the rights of Americans and anyone who Donald Trump labels as an enemy, he added. Well, what about you, Ron White? Where have you been all these decades when this was all seen coming? Donald Trump labels as an enemy the homegrown, remember, while Ron Wyden asked for an audience with ICE. Michael Dodora, U.S. policy manager at digital rights group Access Now, also said that Paragon's track record abroad should raise red flags in Washington. Well, Paragon's, well, but Trump doesn't want to see the problems, does he? He said that right out of his mouth. Paragon's technology has been misused by other governments around the world to target human rights defenders and political dissidents alike, soon to be the homegrown. Americans should be deeply concerned about how the administration could use this new tool for the purposes of domestic repression, and the administration should be very careful too, Dodora warned. Nah, we ain't concerned. The government is always here to help. Hey, is that bridge still for sale? It's something I've touched on for this network, an app that you are in control of, what you do, not centrally locatable on a typical website. We have the first evidence of the validity of that idea. Mississippi digital ID law hits a wall with Mastodon. So this is not necessarily promoting Mastodon. I know nothing about Mastodon. I'm talking about the technology that's built on it, other things really close to it. But listen to the hesitation here and what the government could not do. And consider why. Consider this is what we've been talking about at reallibertymedia.com, Real Liberty Media, trying to pull it together for y'all with the, again, donations. That's all what it's taken. I've been really surprised at how much it costs to get stuff going. And Sound Mind is doing a great job keeping the cost way, way, way down. He puts a lot of time. That's where a lot of money's taken up, and not money, it's time. And researching and doing the work, the hard work it takes. But anyway, this is maybe a validity of the idea that I've had and we've talked about and trying to pull together at this network. Mississippi's privacy-ruining online digital ID law is putting pressure on decentralized platforms, and Mastodon says it simply cannot comply. The organization behind the software states that it lacks the technical ability to verify users' ages and refuses to implement IP-based restrictions, which it argues would wrongly affect travelers and those temporarily located in the states. The law, known as the Walker-Montgomery Protecting Children Online Act, HB 1126, has already led to Blue Sky withdrawing its service from Mississippi. Mastodon is not following that path. Instead, it points to the design of its platform, where individual server administrators are responsible for their own compliance with local laws. Mastodon itself neither collects user data nor maintains centralized control over the network. Although the Mastodon nonprofit arm initially declined to comment, it later provided a statement to TechCrunch. The organization explained that while its own servers require users to be at least 16, it does not have the means to apply age verification, and that the software does not retain any data collected during signup. A feature added in the July 2025 release of Mastodon 4.4 allows server administrators to set up minimums and manage legal terms, but does not support storing verification data. Each server in the network operates independently. It is up to those server owners to decide whether to integrate third-party systems to check user ages. Mastodon confirmed it cannot offer direct or operational assistance to those operators, and instead points to them to resources such as the IFTA's library, which provides guidance and trust and safety practices for federated platforms. The nonprofit reiterated that it does not track user behavior or enforce policy across the wider ecosystem. Responsibility for legal compliance, it says, belongs to those who host and manage the servers in their own jurisdictions. So when you're over 18 loading your own information, what relevance is the law to protect minors? And how do they find you or obtain a lawful warrant to make you comply? But y'all better learn Linux here and de-Googleize your phones best you can. I don't think that's going to be an option in this very, very near future, because the surveillance state will be baked into most upgrade systems, and your ability to sideload or install programs without Apple or Google is about to be taken away. So the idea about what we want to do with the network looks very, very viable, and how you would be in control. And we were trying to make it very simple. It's just taking a lot longer to get it together and to watch as these laws go, so that we can continue to make it look at a system that's going to be able to avoid it. But you hear right there, as I've told you before, deprivatize it to you. And a proper program should make that very easy. And I really can't wait to see something like that. But the idea is really solid. I think it's going on. The words are coming out on how we protect ourselves. And they can't find us all, and they probably can't find any one of us when we're not really broadcasting. All you're doing is you're going out and picking up content. And you serve that to yourself. And so we're going to, again, there's going to be a bigger need for this. I'm hoping that we can continue and there's enough talent to come together to the broadcast of the network to pull this all off. Age verification company exposes user data, reinforcing privacy fears over digital ID systems. again, stay out of those systems, right? Make it so that there's nobody else, no third parties that can peer into your system. An age check system built to shield minors ends up exposing adults in granular detail. A company tasked with confirming users' ages before they access adult content may be compromising their privacy by leaking detailed browser data, according to a report by the nonprofit AI Forensics. Let me interject. Right now they're talking about adult content. I have read the recent reports. Like in the UK, it's coming down. It doesn't matter what the content will be. So don't think, we're talking about, you don't have any adult content necessarily on the network. No, this is look anticipating the future when nothing moves unless you get permission. Then you have the Patriot Act is enforced. The know your customer stuff is working. Everybody has to know everybody. And the government has to know that. The group's investigation highlights serious flaws in some sites after complying with growing online age check requirements, raising new concerns about surveillance and data exposure under the guise of protecting children. France's laws require the users' identities remain concealed, not just for adult websites, but from the age verification service themselves. Known as a double anonymity, this standard is meant to ensure that those performing the verification process have no knowledge of which website users are visiting and what content they attempt to access. But AI Forensics found that AgeGo, one of the verification systems in active use, doesn't meet those expectations. Instead, AgeGo's system reportedly transmits precise details about the user's activity, including the URL of the video being viewed and the name of the website. As the push for the mandatory age check spreads to more jurisdictions, are you a jurisdiction, folks? That was the other. Did you pick that up? You don't have a jurisdiction, then you might be in one, but if you're not part of it, do you have a decision to make? And if the content's yours, then you're not a minor. Where do you have to comply? Is what I've been trying to get people to think all the time I've been broadcasting. Look at the black and white and figure out where you're going to be relative to that. Don't be on the tracks when the train shows up. More jurisdictions, privacy questions are mounting in the U.S. Where the absence of national privacy law creates wide variations in personal data is handled. The Age Verification Providers Association is calling for a unified legal framework. Again, combine it and regulate it. It is harder to win trust in the United States because there is no comprehensive federal privacy law. Hint, hint. So people rely on a patchwork of state rules and sector laws that inconsistently, understandably breeds doubt about who holds the personal data and for how long, the group said in a statement this week. So that just should warn you away from that system to start with and look at how you're going to serve your own information. Workarounds exist. Privacy-conscious users can turn to paid VPNs or alternative DNS services to avoid local filtering. And there's another one. We just heard about it in the prior tab. And I haven't done a story on smart meters in a very long time, but after about a decade, what they were installed for is finally ready to be implemented. It already has been, but now in earnest. Coming on. Ohio. And if I remember right, you got quite a bit of nuclear power over there, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that power is green. Ohio bill will let utilities reduce customer thermostat water heater usage. What did I say about the third-party liability coming on through this sustainable nonsense? Again, climate change is not about the weather. In Ohio, and this is the type of people you have representing you. An Ohio lawmaker wants to reintroduce an electricity peak demand program for small commercial and residential consumers, which would likely flatten their current bills and could create further financial incentives down the line, he said. Under the peak demand program in the House Bill 427, introduced by Representative Roy Klopfenstein, utilities might raise a consumer's thermostat on the hotter days of the year or cycle their use of certain appliances like laundry or dishwashing. and I suppose they have a little red light on it that says, oh, you can use this now, so get over here and do your clothes. Wash your dishes now. It's been 3 days. You have a half an hour. Oh, darn, I missed it. As Ohio is staring down the eventual electrical shortages from growing demand and with the new energy generation far off, Klopfenstein says he believes the bill is another tool in the state's toolbox. If we want to attract more business to Ohio, hint, hint, clue, if we want to have the data centers here, hint, hint, clue, if we don't want rolling blackouts, your consequence, the fear, the terror, the dread, we're going to have to look at a number of creative things, innovative things, he said in an interview Friday. Hope you know where we're going with all this, folks, as I keep trying to highlight it. It's been in the works. You got these idiots in government. They claim they represent you. You listen to what they're representing, not you at all. This is one of them we know works because large commercials use it. What does that have to do with the state and you? Now, maybe the answer is the legislature gets penalized for not planning ahead. No, we don't need no stinking business in Ohio until the current Ohio is fixed. You don't need no more revenue until you serve what you've got. How about that? The clues were right there in the statement. How about we just shut down until we're ready? You shut down all that what you want and do what we need. Any participant in the proposed energy efficiency program would be able to override an individual effort to reduce usage, according to HB 427. It comes about 4 months after Governor Mike DeWine signed an extensive bill that lawmakers and lobbyists have said will prompt new energy generation and otherwise overhaul the system, something I told you needed to be due over a decade or two ago, in particular what we heard about the Modernization Act on the federal end. The bill would serve as, this is beyond smart meters now, this is just a proper service to the population. The bill would serve as just one bridge until more baseload power is produced, Klopfenstein said. Until we get new baseload built, there is still not enough energy. Here we go, my suggestion. Get the legislature to have to pay for it. Get the legislature to have to stand down until it can meet it. It's caused the problem. No more new until we supply the old. That's the penalty, see, folks. And they can't claim they did anything for the state. Not you, the state. The similar energy efficiency effort died last year. That bipartisan bill would have enrolled all Ohio consumers in it, requiring them to opt out rather than opt in. They would have been automatically enrolled and charged a $1.50 monthly fee for discounts on energy-efficient appliances and electronics. That struck a nerve with AFP Ohio, which lobbied hard to kill the bill. So you got one operator there, AFP, whoever they are, that was able to kill the bill. If you've heard me talk about some of this, what we did, Jefferson Mining District, it's a lot of work. How about we just get representatives that stop thinking smart, S-M-A-R-T, and start thinking intelligently? HB 427 is likely to get bipartisan backing, too, Klopfenstein said. The legislature is scheduled to be out of town until the end of the month, so it has not yet gotten its first committee hearing. So you get to pay for their incompetence now. You get to opt in or opt out, it doesn't matter. It's coming on you. Now, how did they know they were going to be incompetent enough not to build more power plants timely? Unless that is a lie and it's a plan to bring on the future that they want without you. But if you survive, you behave as you are told. Comply or die. All planned for you years ago. Oh, is that a little red light on your laundry? You better get it done. Now, what about those power usage for these data centers? Now, where's that going to take us as a society? As we SMART ourselves into the future that they want and not move it intelligently into the future. OpenAI explains reasons for chatbot hallucinations that all this power is fueling. Language models have been conditioned to make wild guesses instead of admitting ignorance, a study has found. The company behind ChatGPT has addressed the persistence problem of artificial intelligence models generating plausible but false statements that it calls hallucinations. Anthropomorphize it, to smartify it, make it sound like it's a human. In a statement on Friday, OpenAI explained that the models are typically encouraged to make a guess, however improbable, as opposed to acknowledging that they cannot answer a question. That in Ohio, they want to put more power to instead of allow you to have enough power and cheaply so. Figure that out. Figure out how this is working now, folks. This is the future that they want. So inefficient on top of it. Again, climate change is not about the weather. The issue is attributable to core principles underlying the standard training and evaluation procedures, it added. Again, they're in control. The third party's in control. OpenAI revealed instances in which language models confidently generate an answer that isn't true, continue to plague newer, more advanced iterations, including the latest flagship GPT-5 system. According to a recent study, the problem is rooted in the way the performance language model is usually evaluated, with the guessing model ranked higher than a careful one that admits uncertainty. Under the standard protocols, AI systems learn the failure to generate an answer is a surefire way to get 0 points on a test, while an unsubstantiated guess may end up being correct. Life's a casino, isn't it? Flipping a coin. Fixing scoreboards can broaden adoption of hallucination reduction techniques, the statement concluded, acknowledging, however, the accuracy which will never reach 100%. Because regardless of the model, size, and search and reasoning capabilities, some real-world questions are inherently unanswerable. Accuracy will never reach 100%. Let's apply that to your health. Let's apply it everywhere they're applying it. And this is manufactured into the product. I would have thought an honest product would actually give you that phase, that storing, and let you check a box. Do you want the hallucination? Or do you want one that's got support? And I think that would be a better tool. Why don't they just do that? But they don't. And this is done on purpose as well, as we probably can see here. Why? MIT study finds artificial intelligence use reprograms the brain, leading to cognitive decline. I guess we can call this malady AI-zheimer's. A new MIT study titled Your Brain on ChatGPT, Accumulation of Cognitive Debt When Using an AI Assistant for Essay Writing Task, has found that the U.S. using chatbot GPT to help write essays leads to long-term cognitive harm. Measurable through EEG brain scans, students who repeatedly relied on ChatGPT showed weakened neural connectivity, impaired memory recall, and diminished sense of ownership over their own writing. While the AI-generated content scored well, the brains behind it were shutting down. The findings are clear. Large language models like ChatGPT and Grok don't just help students write, they train the brain to disengage. So get the link at the Blogcaster or wherever you see the video in the links tree that Sound provides. And you can find out what the researchers found. Very fascinating. And it seems to be right on par with the future people that they want to be able to control. Doesn't it? I mean, it seems logically right. You don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure this out. That's what I've been warning about the whole entire time. Again, as a tool, it's great. As a crutch, not so much. Moving through more health interference. Henry Ford birth cohort, vaxxed versus unvaxxed. reported vaccinated kids had 453% more neurodevelopmental disorders, and 57% rendered chronically ill. And this is on top of what AI does. And you're probably going to need the AI when they do this to you as well. So consider this attack weapon right here. This is like a binary weapon in its own between these two tabs. In his sworn testimony, Siri revealed the results of a long-hidden study from the Henry Ford Health System of Detroit, Michigan. This is the largest vaccinated versus unvaccinated birth cohort study ever conducted in the United States, 18,468. Children were tracked from birth over a 10-year period. The data were drawn directly from electronic medical records, the gold standard for real-world health outcomes. The study official title, Impact of Childhood Vaccination on Short and Long-Term Chronic Health Outcomes in Children, a Birth Cohort Study. The measures and outcomes cited below come directly from the testimony of Aaron Siri, who presented these findings under oath in the U.S. Senate. Unfortunately, the study is not yet publicly available. And you can find, if you look around, you can find what Aaron Siri was testifying to in the Senate. So it kind of correlates all here, so I'm just going to read this to give you a heads up. Those of you that are interested, I hope you are, to get this information and track it down. Compared to unvaccinated children, those who received one or more vaccines had dramatically higher rates of chronic illness. 329% more asthma, 203% more atopic disease, 496% more autoimmune disease, 453% more neurodevelopmental disorders, including 228% more developmental delays and 347% more speech disorders. Siri testified that all these findings were statistically significant, even more striking in conditions where the unvaccinated children had zero cases of brain dysfunction, ADHD, learning disabilities, intellectual disabilities, and tics. There were hundreds of cases among the vaccinated group. After 10 years, the bottom line numbers were devastating. 57% of vaccinated children had at least one chronic health condition, often multiple. Only 17% of unvaccinated children had any chronic illness. So, again, get the link at the Blogcaster. You'll see the charts and all of the other gory details there, and or the videos in the description for the link tree. And remember, this was all the safe and effective stuff, folks. As we can read, sunscreen scandal shakes Australia. Products sold in the country with the highest skin cancer rate don't live up to their labels. So truth in advertising again here as we expand the promotion safe and effective. A sunscreen scandal has erupted in Australia, the country with the world's highest skin cancer rates, finding that some of the popular sun protection products aren't living up to their labels. For many Aussies, no hat, no play rules and relentless sun safety ads have been lifelong staples. So when Newcastle resident Roch diligently applied sunscreen daily, was diagnosed with skin cancer, she was stunned. "I thought I'd done all the right stuff and it still happened to me," she tells BBC. Her shock turned to anger after learning her preferred sunscreen, Ultraviolet's Lean Screen, offered far less protection than advertised, testing at only SPF, the skin protection factor, 4, instead of the promised SPF 50+. Consumer watchdog Choice Australia revealed in June that 16 out of the 20 sunscreens failed to meet their advertised protection levels. Brands from Neutrogena to Cancer Council disputed the results, citing their own tests, but Ultraviolet recalled Lean Screen after multiple failed lab tests. Other brands recently paused sales of additional products, and the country's medical regulator, the Therapeutic Goods Association, is investigating. Much of the controversy centers on unreliable testing. An American lab linked to several failed products has come under scrutiny. And what about this test? Doesn't that sound just like the Great COVID Swindle and the reliable PCR test that's not a test? If you see this again, down under, it's all the same. We saw the same problems. The government does the same things. They allow companies to profit. And it's all about the profit. It's all about business. And that's how the United States was also started. And so here we have the ongoing problem. More fraud. Government supports it. It takes a long time to get right again. And let's move it back over to what I said about the Venezuelan boat. Those folks don't have the right to come back. They don't have the ability. They're dead. And this is what starts to happen when we really aren't checking that the government looks out for us. And if it stops looking out for us, I've been advocating that we have to look out for ourselves. Again, getting back to the great Covey swindle, you see the damage that's coming out. We were looking at one non-vaccine. Now we're even finding out those things that are considered vaccines, and no one's gone back to actually press the definition against, are they really a vaccine? But aside that, we're not even looking at what the mRNA technology did on that 10-year-old study, are we? So just the vaccines are showing these problems. It's finally coming out all these years. Remember all the people, all the decades, and all the harm that's gone on while mothers and fathers were fighting, that saying that their sons and daughters were harmed, and the experts and the officials were saying, no, that's not what's going on. And then they'd hide behind this rule set. And that's another problem. And that's why I keep saying there's just so many things that have to be done. If we keep fighting amongst ourselves, if because someone wants to talk on a stage is enough to shoot them, we are in a very serious and dire place in our society. And that's exactly what the controllers want. The handlers want that. And we actually don't know who it is. There's so many directions that could take. But we get to the place where we're going to now shoot people because of what they say. There's no check. And we saw that coming through the great Covey swindle. And I'm beginning to wonder how much of that is maybe being caused a bit by it. I'm not going to hang my hat on any of that. I'm not going to die on that hill. My point is that there's so many questions regarding what are the actual underlying causes. And there's being more thrown at us. But more and more, again, we have to know our foundation. The foundation we stand on cannot be sanded. We're told that. That we're going to have to be able to discern better before we get harmed. And so I don't know what more that can be done relative to this sunscreen. Maybe there's a different way to approach that as well. Maybe don't get in the sun so much. I mean, people didn't have sunscreen hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and I don't remember skin cancer being a problem. Maybe there's a connection that needs to be looked at there as we move back, if you will, back into our future, but back into what was much more healthy. The things of the future that they want are not healthy. They're not rational either. And we can't expect them to be because they're not about that. They're about making you think someone else is irrational. And then they feed you that and then you think it's all, that's the world. And I've been trying to show you over and over, find the foundation in the way, especially against the government, because that's usually what we can butt up against that can cause us some real harm. It's the real force that can really, well, it can kill us. Any interaction and we could be dead and they can justify it. That you need to learn better a foundation and to address it. And I, again, as I said last episode, the great Covey swindle offered that opportunity in a very easy to understand way. And it was so not understandable, I was surprised. And yet we could see the damage is coming through. And I mean beyond being a contrarian. Oh, I don't do anything the government says. Well, that's fine, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about these things that we are having to watch and look through that are being imposed upon us that becomes that decision. Do you do or don't? Do you comply or do you die? And yet, if you look more careful, there's a way that you can avoid that. But that takes a little bit of knowledge. That takes a little bit of practice. As I said, flex your muscles a bit. Do it where you're not in jeopardy. We have some little ones coming up that are vaccine harm. That's a general vaccine. Not the recent one that we're all consumed by with the mRNA. These are the regular ones that are causing the harm, finally becoming reported. Who are you going to call now? Who are you going to trust? And then there's some real things out there that can harm us. Yet, not everyone. And so that's part of the other risk problem. How do you do that? As a mother or father, how do you make that decision? It becomes very difficult. And that's what they prey upon, too. On the other hand, we start to get out of this profiteering that goes on, the government-licensed profiteering. We find there's a better life that we left, a more wholesome life we left that seemed to protect us a whole lot more than it is now. And so you might look in the news, you see a baby have measles. It now dies of complications of the measles. And you see that's 1 in 10,000. That's the same number as what we heard the autism was a long time back. So maybe that's just a natural number. Sad to hear that the baby died, but there are complications to these things. They didn't say it was the measles that killed them. It was the complications from being sick. What was the cause of that defect is not said. And so, again, watch this new. I try to bring these newses up. The notices we have to us in what we call the news. The notices of what's out there. The notices of what's going on. The notices of the goings-on, like the assassination, are notice to us to take notice of, and then we have the opportunity to apply it. And that's the due process we bring to ourselves. Now, I'm suggesting an open assassination of someone who talks politics, right, wrong, or indifferent. He can't be wrong, it's his opinion. Whether you agree with it or not, it can be something else. But to see someone assassinated for that, we are in a different place. We, the people, better step back, take a step back, and not too long, don't tarry too late, and start to figure out where do we want to place ourselves in stopping that. What can we do to bring the peace that a guy like Trump won't, a guy like Satan Yehu won't, a guy like Vance won't, or Palantir, or all the people behind those, all the same, essentially the same culprits. How are we going to look forward now and protect ourselves? Because now it's coming real. And I've been telling people around me, start looking around. It's getting going to be crazy. I told you during the great COVID swindle, if you're dealing with a mad woman, a madman spitting through their mask over, you have to have a mask, walk away. Give yourself distance. Make sure you're aware before it gets to you. And we're seeing more and more of that as this society starts to break down. Are we going to watch it completely break down and then what? We become its victim? Or do we start stepping up like I've been advocating people do? Find out whatever your skill and talent is and bring it forward and show to others that it's possible. One thing about Charlie Kirk, he inspired people. Great. It's a talent I don't have. Not in the numbers that he has. And that's the generation coming on that you have to do that to, as I said in a past broadcast. You have to inspire people to be aware. And then you have to inspire them into action. And that's why I don't hear too much of. That's what getting behind the woodshed's about. Then you know better, and then you do better. And you take the responsibility. You don't vicariously live through someone else that sounds so good, and yet is as hollow and empty in deed as words are. For as powerful as words are, powerful enough to cause an assassination, they are powerless. And that's where we have to realize it. We can't let people talk us into something that's not really for us. For that, we need that foundation. And I don't necessarily preach too much, but if we don't find a foundation for each one of us that we can trust better than what the government can offer or the guy next door, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. As I point out, the Bible is a good thing. We can go through religion. I prefer to use those if I use it as international law, it's the international norms. When I'm dealing with people, it's the international norm. You're going to find a ton of what's in the Bible in our international laws and in our laws. Thou shalt not murder is a simple one. So you can use that as a foundation. And I brought up in this episode, again, that it's not for man to declare a Jew. It's asked to God. That relieves me of a whole lot of thought. And it also exposes a way I can prove when someone's declaring that for themselves, that maybe they're not of God. Maybe they're not of good. Let's put it that way. Take out the religion. They're not of good. They have a fraudulent intention. They're trying to egoistically bring themselves forward without substance. Maybe we should be careful of that. Maybe their words are powerful enough to identify. We don't need to kill them. We just don't need to be exploited by them. This has been BTW RLM 645. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips. Or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, leaning close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned.
the woodshed. No stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon, fierce and bold. In the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.